Hi, I'm Jack Bailey. Welcome back to the show. We have a very exciting episode for you today. We're talking to NHLer, ex-Ottawa Senator, and now current forward for your Toronto Maple Leafs, Scott Sabourin. How's it going, Scott?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Very good. And of course, we're always going to be joined by Ono Kane, our host of the Hockey Talk segment. How's it going, Ono?
Good, good. How are you, Jack?
I'm very good. I'm excited to be interviewing a member of my beloved Toronto Maple Leafs. So it's very exciting. So you want to start it off on?
Yeah. So the first question I've got for you is, how'd you get started? Like, when did you first get into hockey? What age, and how did it all start for you?
Yeah, I've been playing hockey my whole life. You know, I started playing as young as I could. My parents had me in it when I was, 5 years old or six, whatever it is. And it's kind of just been a lifelong, passion of mine, really. I've been playing ever since, and I've had a few good bounces to kind of help me along my road, and now we're here today.
So in the OHL, you played for the Oshawa Generals. What was it like realizing that, hey, when was the point that you realized, hey, I could actually make this a career?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd say I really realized it in my 20-year-old season with Oshawa. I finally had some success. I had put some pucks in the net, and I had some points, and some NHL teams started calling and started looking. So I would say that was the first time where I really considered it. Before that, it was just kind of trying to prolong my career and having some fun and doing the best I can with it. And then I was lucky enough to spin it into this.
So going along the path we're taking here with the first, talk us through your first NHL game and like what went through your head.
Yeah, that was an awesome day that I'll remember for a long time. We were actually playing Toronto, which is kind of cool looking back on it now. I had a pretty good game. I was on the puck. I ended up scoring a goal, which was caught me by surprise, and probably caught a lot of people by surprise. But I think I had a little good luck on my side that night. I had my family, my wife's family was there to support me as well, and a couple friends. So it was great to get all the support, and the nerves were running high, but that's kind of to be expected, I think, in your first game. And I got to do, my solo lap beforehand and all that cool stuff. So it was a really cool moment, and I'll cherish that for a long time.
So earlier in that preseason, actually, one of the more famous moments on social media, at least, Austin Matthews looked behind the jersey. Did you realize it happened, and were you surprised at how big it got?
Yeah, I mean, I have a certain role out there where it's sometimes my job to get under other guys' skin, and to be physical and try to get a rise out of them. And so I think I'd been running around a little bit, and he obviously wasn't happy about it. So he went and did that, and probably had the last laugh in it all, but that's okay. We have a good chuckle about it now that we're teammates. So
you grew up in Ottawa, obviously, Nepean, and you got drafted by the Brockville Braves into the CJHL. What was that like, getting drafted into a younger league at a younger age?
Yeah, that was really cool. Coming out of minor hockey, I didn't really expect much. I wasn't sure what my future had in store. And then Brockville drafted me, and I went out there and I said, we'll go see what happens. We'll go to training camp. We'll have some fun with it, and we'll kind of just go from there. And I ended up making the team as a 16-year-old. I think we had four 16-year-olds. So we had a pretty young team, and Todd Gill is my coach, who's ex-NHLer, pro coach now. And he really knew his stuff, and it was kind of nice. Like, he introduced me to all of that, and that side of hockey and the competitiveness of it all, and to the seriousness of the junior ranks. And yeah, it was a great time in Rockville.
So earlier in your career, when you were playing for the LA organization, you got traded to the Minnesota Wild. What was it like being traded, and how did you find out you were traded?
I think I was actually having a nap or about to have a nap, and my phone started ringing, and it was Rob Blake on the other side. So I wasn't thinking much of it. I think the deadline had come and gone, but I guess it was kind of a last minute thing. And so by the time the paperwork went through, whatever, it was a little past the deadline. And I got a call, and he said, "Hey, you know, Scott, we're moving you to Minnesota, best of luck," type thing. And I think it was needed at that point in my career. I had kind of been with I'd been with LA's organization for a few years. You know, and they had a great team. They'd won some cups there, so it was a really hard team to kind of break into the lineup. You know, and so I needed a fresh look. I needed a fresh some fresh scenery, and that's where Minnesota and Iowa came in. And I felt I got my confidence up a little bit there, but we then parted ways after the end of that season as well. So
So tell us a little bit about the Milan Lucic fight earlier this season. You know, thousand.
Yeah. Well, it was his 1,000th game, as you guys know. And so, you know, I figured what better chance to ask him, where, you know, he'd probably feel somewhat obligated to partake. And sure enough, I was right. He was willing, and he's a big, tough lad, and, you know, he can hold his own. So I was just happy to come out of it in good shape, and I was happy to see him, you know, out of it in good shape. And it was a good way to honor his 1,000th game.
Wow. Yeah, it's a great story, and it's pretty cool to be a part of that 1,000th game for such a historic player in the National Hockey League. And just speaking of fighting in general, what is the preparation? Do you know that you're going to get into a fight the night of, or is it just something that happens in the moment?
It depends on the scenario. I don't think you necessarily always go looking for it. Sometimes the game just develops that way. And other nights, you know, maybe you are going out looking for it, or maybe you're trying to get your team that edge, or make sure they're prepared for it, or trying to send a message early. And so I would say it's you know, scenario to scenario. There's no clear cut way to do it, but, you know, you probably know if there's someone who's willing on the other side, or if there's a tougher lineup or a tougher team being dressed, then you're aware of that, I would say. Yeah.
So when you played with Manchester, you won the Calder Cup. What happened there? Like, what was your initial thought process when you won?
Yeah, that was a ton of fun. We had a really good group of guys back in Manchester, and we were lucky enough to take it all the way. And so once we did that, well, then it was on to the celebrations, and we pieced together a few good nights with, you know, a lot of fun and probably a couple too many drinks, but that's okay. You know, looking back on it now, we earned it, and we had worked hard for it all year. So yeah, that was a great group of guys that I'll, you know, remember for a long time.
So who is the toughest guy that you've had to compete against, either in the National Hockey League, AHL, or just any level of your career? Who is the most skilled player you've gotten to play against?
The most skilled player, I'd say, you know, Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, those guys, Nathan MacKinnon, those, you know, the high-end NHL guys. You know, obviously being on this side of it now, getting to see what the Leafs guys can do, you know, such as Austin and Mitch, the way they handle themselves, and just to see kind of their thought process and how they can, you know, move the puck around in practice and the way they play. It's really good to learn from.
Yeah. Who was your favorite player to play with in junior or NHL, like, ever? Just whether it's a buddy of yours or just playing with like a high-end player like Austin Matthews.
That's a good question. I'll say, for the purpose of kind of respecting the way they go about things and, you know, being good pros, and they knew that even at a young age, was I played with Boone Jenner and Scott Laudon in Oshawa, and I always respected the way they showed up to compete every night, and they kind of, you know, led a group into battle there. So yeah, I would say that I learned a lot off them, and we had a good time playing back then, and I'm happy to see them continue to be doing well here in the league nowadays.
So you've had a ton of great coaches over your career, DJ Smith, Sheldon Keefe, many more. What is there any coach that really stands out to you that really shaped your career?
Yeah, I would say DJ Smith helped me out a lot in that sense. I had him in junior, my 20-year-old year, and that was when I kind of had a bit of a breakout season. And so ever since then, he helped propel my career forward into the professional ranks. And then I once again had him, in my first NHL season, which was last season. And he helped me kind of propel my career forward at the NHL rank. So, yeah, DJ was a good guy, and he's believed in me for a long time. So I appreciate that in him.
Was there any, like, ever a time where you just wanted to give up or, like, just quit hockey?
Yes and no. It's definitely hasn't been the easiest route, and there's times where you second guess, what you're there for, but then again, once you get back out on the ice and you're playing a game, you kind of understand, what you're there for. And so I would say, yeah, there's probably a point early in my career, even before the pro ranks, where, I wasn't sure where it was heading and what have you. So there was some hesitation, but I'm glad I stuck with it, obviously. And it just goes to show that if you stick with it, well, then good things will often happen.
So feel free to not answer on this because I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. But what were your thoughts on the Tom Wilson thing? And of course, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to.
That's a good question. I think there's a place in the game for the physical play. I don't love the way that unfolded. And then the league makes their decision. So they didn't think it was a suspendable offense. And then yesterday you see the New York Rangers obviously responding in their own way by having a physical game. And you like to see that, at least where they stood up for their teammates, and they thought they were wronged. And so you don't love to see it every game, but it's nice to see some emotion and some grit, come through in times of need, such as yesterday.
Moving on to a more lighter subject, I've heard you're a fisherman. What was your favorite place or favorite fish you've ever caught?
I live on the river out in the west end of Ottawa, and so I do most of my fishing out there now. I try to tackle muskie. It's a pretty elusive fish. But yeah, I caught a handful of nice ones this summer, so I would say that those are my favorite fish and favorite species to catch. But they your work's cut out for you for sure. You gotta spend some time out there, and you gotta know what you're doing.
I'm not sure if you noticed, but there was kind of a global pandemic this year. And how has
Yeah.
that affected like going to the rink? And what's the process now going to the Scotiabank Arena and during these COVID
Yeah,
times?
well, things are a little different, obviously. I mean, for everyone in the world, but for us as well, we're lucky to just be able to get back to work. Some people weren't as fortunate, and lost a lot of their livelihood, and whether it was their business or someone they loved, or so we're in a pretty good position as far as how it goes. We have our own little bubbles, so we get tested twice a day for COVID, just to make sure everything's clear. And then there's all sorts of different protocol, like whether it's assigned seats on the plane or where you're eating, or whether we're even eating at the rink or if we're taking it home. And yeah, things are running a little differently, and it's kind of made it, a little more social, a little less social, all in the same time. You can't really get together outside the rink much. And but in the locker room, it's nice to get a bit of social time, and that's kind of the only time we get out of the house. So it's nice you cherish that a little more.
When you first signed with Toronto, what was your first like interaction with Austin Matthews? After the whole jersey thing, what was did you come up and apologize or what
Yeah,
happened?
I don't really remember it too well. I think we were just on the ice, and it was before practice, so there wasn't too much said. But we just introduced ourselves and had a little chuckle, and that was that. And he's been a good guy, you know, ever since I've known him. So at the end of the day, you know, I really just got to thank him for giving me a bit of publicity back then, I guess, and putting me on the map. So.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
No problem, guys. That was awesome. Thanks for having me.
And do you want to plug your social medias before we let you go?
I'm okay. I mean, you can look me up on Instagram or Twitter. It's I'm not even sure what my at's at, but if you look up Scott Saverin, I'm sure it'll pop up, and I'll make sure to keep an eye out for this show and for the future shows to come.
Awesome. Well, thank you again.
Good for you guys for doing this. Well done, guys.
Thanks. And we'll be right back. We were going to be joined next by Brent Wallace from the Wally and Mathot Show. We'll be right back. Brent Wallace is going to be joining us from the Wally and Mathot Show. How's it going, Brent?
Excellent, Jack. How are you, my friend?
I'm very good. So I'm really happy you could join us here. So a lot has happened over this year for you, especially with your career and stuff. And you started the new show, Wally and Mathot. How did that happen?
Yeah, I wasn't thinking of doing a podcast anytime soon. So in February 3rd, if I'm not mistaken, that's a day that I'll never forget. I got called, told they were, you know, laying me off along with the 200 other people across the Bell Network. And then, so I scrambled and didn't know what was going on in 23 years at TSN. And I didn't think much was going to change. I just worked the night before till 3 o'clock taping a hit for SportsCenter. Didn't see any of this coming. So I'm floored. So for about 5 days or 4 days, I don't know what's going on. Figure out what I'm going to do in my career, what's life going to be like. And you're like, man, I'm 47. I don't know who's all hiring middle-aged guys on TV at the moment. So skip ahead a few days, things start to clear up. And then my wife says, well, why don't you do a podcast and talk to Mark Mathot, who I've known for a long time. And he was, I called him up and he was like, yeah, let's do this. And so ever since that day, whatever day it was, we've chatted and put together this quasi little show that some people seem to have enjoyed.
Yeah, no, it's been a pretty big hit, especially in the Ottawa region, but just across Canada too. You've had quite a few great guests. Like, you've had basically a ton of Ottawa Senators alumni, Daniel Alfredson, Mark Stone, all these great guests. And has there been an interview that's really stuck out to you?
That's a good question. We have been very, to start, I will say we've been very fortunate of all the guys who have reached out and come on our show. No one owes us anything. They have no reason to come on and try and sell a product or anything. So they've done it out of just basically the goodness of their heart. So that's always been a huge overwhelming thing for both of us that for the most part, we haven't gotten a whole lot of no's. So interviews, like the ones people tend to see a lot of just the name and are watching the names as opposed to the actual interviews. Like Tessa Bonhomme is a fantastic interview. She's one of my favorites. Nick Foligno was a really outstanding interview. And Kevin Bieksa and Jane McLennan, who are two good buddies, they just tell great stories. And that's all we want. We just want to tell some stories and try to get away from the, you know, you've got 6 points in 8 games and how does it feel? We just want guys to say, listen, you know, one night I ended up at Paris Hilton's house, or I was, you know, drunk somewhere else with, you know, and I remember Testa Bonhomme and I talk about a story of just being in Slovakia at a bar that we didn't see coming, this massive dance floor, and it looks like this small little house, like just some weird stuff that people don't know. And that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. So let's take it back to the start of your career. What gave you the inspiration to join sports media?
Oh, I didn't think I was smart enough to do anything else, basically. And when I was in high school, I was doing, I played basketball in grade 10, and then I didn't make the grade 11 or grade 12 team. I just wasn't good enough. So I was doing basically Rogers Cable for high school basketball. I became the analyst. And then I went to university for a year to do phys ed, thought I was going to do probably a phys ed teacher or something. That didn't work out because I just didn't pay attention. So fast forward, my mom says, hey, there's a broadcasting school in Halifax. Why don't you go do that? I grew up in Fredericton, by the way. So Halifax wasn't that far. Anyway, my mom says, you know, go try this. So I went to a broadcasting school that was run at the time by Alex J. Walling, who was the TSN reporter for the Maritimes. And he was also basically the sports host for the nightly newscast on, which was Global, which wasn't Global, but it's now Global TV in the Maritimes. So I go there, start doing the broadcasting school. I become, AJ takes me under his wing. We get along really well. We hit it off. He allows me to do some other stuff. I end up becoming a volunteer at the TV station and then eventually work that way into a job.
Wow, that's an impressive, it come on the fly. And did you ever expect it? Once you went to that school, did you ever expect it to turn into a career? Or
Good question. Yeah, I did, because I was naive enough at the time to like, so when I was going to school, the Atlantic Bowl, which was the CIS semifinals for the football for a national championship in Halifax. And I was, AJ got me to be a spotter in the booth with, at the time, John Wells and the late Leif Pettersson. So I'm in there helping them out. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm 22 and I'm trying to point out who's tackling who, whatever. At the end of it, we're talking. And I told John Wells, I said, I will see you at TSN in 5 years. I don't know why I'm doing stuff like this. Why am I even saying this? Anyway, he signed the back of my press pass from the 1993 Atlantic Bowl. See you at TSN in 5 years. And I was hired in 1998, which was 5 years later.
That's awesome.
And I was rejected beforehand, though. I still have the rejection letter. I think it was 2 years before TSN wrote me and said, yeah, thanks for bothering us with your resume. You're not going to be hired here. Anyway, 2 years later, they hired me.
Like, how crushing is that to feel like, oh, you don't want me?
It's a good, that, you know what? That's a good one, because they tell you early on, expect to get rejected from everybody. I probably sent out 30 or 40, which would have been videotapes at the time. You don't deal with that stuff anymore, Jack. But back in my day, sending them out all across Canada, and I got rejection letters from the Score, and the Score wasn't even on video at the time. It was just, they were just running highlights and voiceover, and they sent me back a thing and said, yeah, you're not qualified. And I'm like, hold, that one bugged me, because I'm like, how am I not qualified just to voice some stuff? But anyway, I've kept the TSN one and the Score rejection letters, and even Global, which I ended up working for later as a full-time before TSN had sent me one. So it's funny how just everything comes around, but you can't get discouraged. You just keep plugging away. And so I just did. I didn't know that I was ever going to get hired at TSN, to be honest, Jack, but why not say you're going to be there in 5 years? So I did.
Yeah, that's awesome. So let's say in the future you get invited as a speaker on this big, in front of this big stage for a bunch of journalism students. Ooh. What is the one piece of advice you're trying to give to people who work in that business?
That's a great question. And I would have said this before I lost my job, but it would be like, are you nuts? This industry right now is just compressing and compressing. Now it's splintering out to a more like, we are not on mainstream media as we continue to cut cords and people are cutting cable. And that is, they're consuming their all their TV or all their video online. All their information is now Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. So you'd have to be, the biggest thing is you've got to be diverse. You've got to be able to do it all. And that's the one thing I was able to do when I first started. I was learning to shoot video. I was learning to edit. I was in the control room during the 6 o'clock news, running the auto cue and timing out the show. Like, I was doing all that stuff. And so you became important because you could do a bunch of different stuff. I would say you got to learn to do it all. And that's the one thing. But the other thing is, don't get discouraged. People are going to tell you all the time you can't do it. It's like in anything, just push them out of the way and go, hey, beat it. I'm just going to try it. And if it doesn't work, we'll find out later. I have no idea, Jack, if this little show we're doing is going to work. I really don't. We're 21 episodes into this thing. I don't know, but I'm going to try it and see what happens. And so until someone says, like, we're never going to watch your show again and no one's watching, I'm going to keep trying to do this. It's fun. You just got to keep plugging away.
That's awesome. Well, do you want to start talking to some Senators?
Sure. Let's do it.
So the big news out of the Senators today is they signed Artem Zub for a 2-year, $2.5 million contract, AAV. Your thoughts on the contract?
I like the contract. I think Artem Zub is he fits in their spot very nicely on the right side, probably that second pairing. He's very unassuming, that, you know, he doesn't garner a lot of attention, but he just does the job. That's all you want your defenseman to do, is just get the job done. So I like him. I like what he can become. I like the potential that he has. And really, like, he's played in the KHL. He's played in the Olympics. He's played on the big stage. He knows how to play the game. He's adjusted well to North America. He's had a lot of guys who are around him that speak Russian, so that's helped a lot. I think in the 2 years of this contract, he will look really good playing 18, 19, 20 minutes a night.
Yeah, I really like the player. I think he's fit in really well. I know a lot of KHL players, when they come over to the North American League, they sometimes have trouble adjusting to different language, different country, just different lifestyle. And I think Zubs really, really fit well in this Ottawa Senators team. I mean, he's gotten a ton of chances this year, being a top four guy majority of the season.
The one thing is, and you brought it up, and it's about Zub and it's about everybody else who comes over, and that is, I've gone over and covered world championships and spent a month in different countries and world juniors in Russia. Like, you have to adjust, and just coming over, they just don't play hockey. You've got to learn to live in a whole different world that you can't read the labels or speak the language or understand what's going on. That's a huge factor. And you're all alone. These guys are kids. They're just coming over. They're not men by any stretch of the imagination. They're just trying to figure out how to pay their bills, how to get groceries. And plus, you got to try and play hockey every night. That's a huge adjustment that people overlook all the time.
So a lot of people are like this deal, or what I've heard is they like the player, they like the deal. It's good deal in a nutshell, in just a vacuum. But in the general scheme, Ottawa now has down to $6 million in cap space. Now, they are losing Artem Anisimov, assuming he walks this year in free agency. But you do still have to re-sign Brady Tkachuk, Drake Batherson, and players of that sort. Do you think, like, how do you think Ottawa's going to handle this cap this year?
Cap space will not be an issue. It won't be an issue. They've got wasted money just sitting around. I don't see a problem with this cap space whatsoever. In fact, the more they try and just hide money and pay salaries that are way below actual what the cap space is, that's what they did with Derek Stepan. That's the reason they brought him in, because his cap space was so high, but they didn't have to pay him any money. So I suspect he'll be gone. He'll be off the books. There'll be a few like that. They've got plenty of money. Have they managed the cap well? They've managed their budget well. I will say that, when they only have to pay out, I forget what the final number was, but like $38 million or $40 million in salary, as opposed to paying the $80 million salary cap.
Yeah. So Ottawa, it should be very interesting to see. They have, what do you think is the number one priority this summer?
Well, the easy one is to say sign Brady Tkachuk, but really he's not going anywhere. He's a restricted free agent. The same with Drake Batherson. They'll get something done. What that contract is, that's a big question. I mean, is it just a quick bridge, or is it a long-term? That one, I honestly don't know I can't get a pulse on what that should be. I think it's a bridge deal for Brady, but boy, would you not love to sign him to a long-term deal? Does he want to do that, is the question. And then Pierre Dorion tried to deny it today again, and I'm not sure why, but they need a top 4D, and they need one to play with Thomas Chabot. It's clear that it's not Nikita Zaitsev. Yes. And if it is, I'd like to know where he thinks that is, because no one else has been able to see it. And it's not Artem Zub as of yet. So they need to find someone. So, let's admit that there is a need to fix this blue line. And it's not going to be with Jacob Bernard-Docker and Jake Sanderson. They can't continue to put a whole bunch of young guys on a blue line and expect them all to succeed. They're small in the back end. They've got to figure out how to get bigger. They've got to figure out how to be a little more veteran.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the biggest priority and the easy, like you said, gimme, would be to sign Brady Tkachuk and Drake Batherson. And I know a lot of people floated out every off season, and it rarely ever happens, but do you think there's any shot of an offer sheet coming Ottawa's way?
No, but I want it to happen. Right? I just want the chaos to happen and to see how this all unfolds. I think whoever thought of the offer sheet when they were doing the CBA is a genius to me, because it has this it has this completely screw you attitude by other GMs to this one GM. So I want to see an offer sheet, and I want to see what's going to happen, but I would be shocked if it even came, and I'd be shocked even more if the Sens didn't match it. But yes, I want it to happen.
Yeah. So Ottawa's big acquisition last year was trading for Matt Murray. How do you think he settled in this year? How are you excited?
Jack, you already know the answer to this question. Why are you even trying? So the answer to that one is tough, but I mean, he struggled. Like, there's no other way to put it. And I know Matt Murray, I've covered world championships with him. I've covered his playoff, his Stanley Cup runs. He's a very nice guy, and I really, really like him. And we've chatted a lot outside of being on camera, but there's no question he has struggled. He has struggled to figure out how to work into this Ottawa Senator lineup, where it has, I mean, at the beginning of the year, they were terrible defensively in front of him. They were giving up a gazillion chances a game. So he was left out to dry in a lot of nights, but yet he did not fit in well. And he just had a new baby, so there is the distraction And yes, distractions still happen at home, even despite the fact that they're paid $6 million a year. So I suspect he'll turn it around. But that would be another chaotic thing. If he starts next year struggling, I can't even imagine what this organization will be like trying to figure out what to do with Matt Murray. But I suspect he'll be fine.
Because $6 million is a lot for a backup goalie.
Yeah.
If it ever comes to that, it's a lot of money for a backup goalie. Yeah. And another big thing happening this offseason, the Seattle Kraken expansion draft. What do you think Ottawa's game plan will be going into protecting their players? This is a very big question, so I don't expect you to have a
Like, it seems like there's a lot of easy answers of where to, what to, who to protect and what to do. I don't think they're going to lose a goalie. I just don't think either one of them is really that great for them to decide among their top two that he's going to be the guy. I just, you know, like, are you going to take Anton Forsberg, who's been around on waivers for probably not. Joey DeCord maybe, but Joey DeCord's certainly unproven. While I think he's quality, I'm not sure that he's right where they need him to be right now to be a backup goalie in the National Hockey League on a consistent basis. I don't think they lose a goalie. So do you protect Matt Murray is a question or not? Yeah. Evgeny Dadonov is the one I'm interested in. I suspect they're going to protect him, but I wouldn't. I don't think he fits into this lineup whatsoever. I think this is a disaster of a signing. I think they felt they were forced into try and go get something. I'm not a Dadonov fan. I never was. He just isn't the type of player that I want on my roster. I just don't see it in him. Again, another guy that's had to make an adjustment coming to a whole different place and whatever. And through this pandemic, he's a guy that I would not protect and hope that he gets taken, but I don't see that happen.
Yeah. You touched on Ottawa kind of feeling forced to make a big acquisition. I think biggest knock, I mean, for the past few years is not re-signing their guys, Carlson, Stone, et cetera, et cetera. Do you worry that may force Ottawa to maybe overpay guys like
Patterson, you have to
Tkachuk? Yeah.
You're going to have to, even if you want to sign a free agent, you have to overpay to come to Ottawa. There's tax implications compared to playing in the U.S. And two, you're playing in a small market team. You don't have the outside endorsements that you have playing even in Vancouver or Montreal or Toronto. And then the third is you're playing on a team that is known across the league as being completely unstable when it comes to its front office, that you never know what's going to happen. You never know who's going to be around. So you're coming here strictly for money. So whoever it is, and whether you're a restricted free agent or not, you are going to ask, and rightfully so, for the most amount of money you can get. And I don't see Drake or Brady Tkachuk trying to take a penny less than they really have to ultimately to try and stay here. It's just, why would you? Jack, if they're going to offer you $1 million to keep doing what you're doing, and would you say, no, I'm going to take $900,000? Not likely, right? So those guys, I suspect, I just think Brady signs the bridge deal because he's going to want to try and hit a home run in this next contract. And Drake Batherson doesn't have a lot of negotiating room despite his fantastic season. So I don't think there's any issue in getting them signed.
Yeah. Okay. So do you have a ballpark prediction of what Tkachuk gets or Batherson gets?
No, I don't. Like, I would pay Brady Tkachuk every penny he wanted. Now, is he Connor McDavid? No, and he's not Leon Draisaitl. But boy, I like $7 million to me wouldn't be enough. I've watched him. I know him as a person. I've seen what he could do. He's the guy that you want to lead your franchise, and I don't see how he's not the highest paid player you have in your roster. And so then you go to Thomas Chabot, makes $8 million. So anyway, and I think Drake Batherson, does he fall in the, I don't know if he gets more. I don't know if he gets four. He might get four.
Really?
Just because he's an RFA and he's unproven. But I mean, again, I think he's going to be worth every penny that he probably gets out of this contract. But I don't see him getting over four.
Yeah. I mean, both of them could go the bridge deal way and try to bet on themselves. But I see, like, if they don't go bridge, I think if I'm Brady Tkachuk's agent, I don't accept anything less than $8 million because, oh, you're saying I'm worth less than Thomas Chabot. That's the card I play if I'm that agent.
Okay, but I'm going to tell you right now, my good buddy Mark Mathot will tell you that Thomas Chabot's the MVP of the team this year. And he's not, and he's being straight up honest. Now, I've argued with him that I think Brady Tkachuk is, but he is adamant that without Thomas Chabot, they're nowhere. And so Thomas Chabot's probably worth $8 million. But Brady, so here's the thing with Brady's contract, though, and this is what you're going to have to watch for, is their signing bonus money. So the whole reason that people are leaving Ottawa is because they will not give you a signing bonus check. So Thomas Chabot has no signing bonus money. And Colin White doesn't have any signing bonus money that I'm aware of either, because they don't want to have to shell out checks early on. They want to just pay you per year per salary. So Mark Stone wasn't going to get any kind of protection during the lockout, if there was going to be one, or when everybody else is signing all these big front loaded deals, he wasn't getting any of that. That became a huge part of the negotiation, and it's a huge part in all of them. The same with Eric Karlsson's. You got to start to pay the guys, and you got to pay them the way that everybody else is being paid.
Yeah, it should be really interesting. And then Drake Batherson. Is it me, or does Drake Batherson not have a higher ceiling than Colin White, who's making five?
Oh, no question. Colin White's contract is atrocious. Yeah. It is horrendous.
Yeah.
And I don't have any time for it, because they felt forced. They had to show the fan base that the guys want to stay here. And then Colin White is going to be one of the faces of the franchise in the future. Okay. I don't know that he's on the roster next season. So like this whole contract they threw at him it was a panic move, and it's a mess, and it's handcuffed them, because there's no way you can tell me if they ever come up for contract is like Tim Stützle, Josh Norris, Drake Batherson, Connor Brown. I'm probably missing somebody else, are all less money than Colin White. Like that contract is terrible. I really like Colin White. I think he's serviceable. He's nowhere near a top two player or a top two center. That contract just handcuffs them.
I think he is a phenomenal third line player. I think he's one of the best in the league third line players.
I wouldn't go that far, but I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah. I don't think he's worth $5 million.
No, he's not.
Yeah, that's so I think Batherson could also use, hey, you gave Colin White.
Yep.
I think the players in this situation have all the negotiating power, just because Ottawa. Like,
not as an RFA though, right? They have your rights. And so until you can become that's the only thing that's going to keep this one contract from Drake Batherson of being paid $5 million a year is the RFA status. That's all.
Yeah, it should be very interesting to see what they do with their RFAs. And other UFAs this year are Ryan DeZingle, who they brought in at just a bit, I guess, bit before the trade deadline in the Galchenyuk trade. Do you see a future where Ottawa brings him back?
I mean, you've got Austin Watson coming back. You got to have a spot for. So you also probably want to see Alex Formanton in your lineup. So I just don't know where he goes. If you're going to have your third line, it's got Connor Brown and Nick Paul on the wings. Again, where does Ryan DeZingle fit? I don't know that there's a fit for him, but if there is, that means that you're trying to move someone else around that you don't think is going to be here. So if they sign him, then someone else is going to be moved out. And I think Alex Formanton has probably earned that spot of late, but that's just me.
I really like Alex Formanton just as like a non-biased Sens, I'm not a Sens fan myself, so I'm just very unbiased when it comes to the team, but I love watching him. He's fast.
Yeah.
Seems to be a great player.
He's a fast, but he's an annoying little jerk on the edge, for lack of a better term. So he's going to be that guy that's going to cause people to want to punch him in the face or give him a spear, he'll draw penalties because he's annoying and he's a pest, which everybody loves to hate, but you really want on your team just to gnaw on and annoy the other team. So I think he brings a lot more than that speed, but that speed is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. It is very impressive. And then playoffs is coming up. Do we have a prediction? Can we get an official prediction? Or are you waiting to announce that on your show?
Prediction for the Sens? For this year's playoffs?
Playoffs, yeah.
That's a good question. So we did pick our Stanley Cup winner today, which I think is going to be I think Meth took Colorado from me. So I went to Vegas, but I really like Colorado. Keep this between you and I, I'm going to take Colorado. Okay.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. That North division, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I'm not sold on Edmonton. I wanted, I thought Winnipeg was going to be the team. I just like their goaltending. I thought Connor Hellebuck, and they're a aggressive, strong, physical group up front. So, but is Toronto the real deal? Do they have goaltending? I'm a little concerned about their goaltending. And then Montreal is just a mess of injuries, and I don't know if they're all going to be healthy in time or be enough to compete with Toronto. Jack, I don't know the answer in the North, but it seems like I have to lean towards Toronto, but I don't like Freddie Anderson in goal, and Jack Campbell doesn't excite me either.
So I am definitely a lot biased when it comes to the North Division because I am a Toronto Maple Leafs fan.
We all make mistakes, Jack. It's okay.
Unfortunately, I am a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, but I am not worried about our goaltending because unless Sheldon Keefe and this team tries to be galaxy brain it and, you know, let's put Frederick Anderson in net. If we put Frederick Anderson in net, we're not winning. We're not winning. He's clearly not up to playoff starting Stanley Cup contending caliber, you know, like he let in 6 goals in a period, in a game and a half in the AHL. And then had quite a few stinkers against the Ottawa game. And yeah.
Okay. So how, and this happened to Ottawa a few years back with the Hamburglar run, who had the great run. And then they ended up putting him in, but the fatigue factor on Andrew Hammond was high and Craig Anderson went in. They just couldn't turn it around in time. So I know where this is going, and it's tough to tell your number one guy who's kind of led you there. And I know Jack Campbell has great numbers, but I think they're all in on Freddie, and I think it's going to be Freddie. But if they get down 2-0, then I think you see Jack Campbell. But that's the problem. You don't have any faith in your goaltending either. So I don't like the Toronto Maple Leafs chances with your goaltending.
I feel a lot more confident in that with Jack Campbell because he is just like, he's 17-2-2. With the .930 save percentage. That's a goalie I like going into the playoffs.
But he's unproven.
Yeah. Well, this is the time to prove it.
You know? Well, okay. It worked for Ken Dryden. Sure. Yeah. All right.
I mean, it should be interesting. And again, I'm probably pretty biased on this topic. But yeah, it'll be really interesting. But I don't trust this team until we can make it out of the first round. I feel like this is the year that we're actually competing for the cup, but I won't feel that way until we make it out of the first round.
This is a really good hockey team for a regular season team. And I don't mean that disparaging. I've seen Ottawa have amazing President Cup winning teams, and then they're not built for the playoffs. My concern is, are they built for the playoffs? And I don't know that they are. But I don't know anybody in that North Division that's built better than them or is playing better than them at the moment. That's all.
And then one of my last questions before I let you go, because you've been very generous with your time here. Mark Mathot, early in the podcast, making some hot takes. And one of the biggest hot takes, especially on Twitter, was the Ottawa Senators will be way better than the Toronto Maple Leafs in 2 years' time.
Two or three years, isn't it?
I thought it said 2 years. I might be wrong. Maybe. You might have said 2 to 3 years, but for argument's sake, 2 to 3 years. Let's say that.
Okay.
Are you in agreement, or are you saying he's crazy?
Okay, so just so we're clear, I don't live with meth, and we only talk on the phone occasionally, so what he says doesn't necessarily have anything to do with me. It's an interesting take. I didn't see it coming. He might be right. If there's going to be a lot of changeover, I suspect, with Toronto, or somehow, unless they fix that, I don't like the blue line. Unless they fix the blue line, I think there's going to need to be change. And again, we just talked about goaltending. So the way that the Ottawa Senators are trending, I might be in agreement. But then again, they might blow the team up in 2 years, and I have no idea. So yeah, exactly. I never know what to think with Ottawa.
On this path.
I think he might be right. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. So I really like Ottawa's chances in 2 to 3 years. I think they could be competing. I think in any other division, I think if they aren't in the Atlantic division, I think they're competing for it. It's going to be hard to knock out one of Toronto, Tampa, Boston, Montreal, Florida.
See, I think if it goes back to that division, they're in a lot tougher spot than they are playing in the North. No question. Yes. That Atlantic, is it still called the Atlantic? Is going to probably is probably going to just beat them down. I don't know how they're better than any of those other teams.
Yeah, it's going to be tough in those years. But back to the comment, I really like Ottawa. I really like Ottawa as a team, and I think they'll go far. I don't know how much I don't think Toronto's going to get worse, and I don't think Toronto's going to get worse. And I know big discrepancy with a lot of people is that blue line, Riley probably leaving in the next 2 years, but Toronto in a 3-year time span probably has three. I could name you off the top of my head, 3 to 4 guys who could be on that blue line in I could name you two guys that will be on that blue line next year. And then maybe Sandin and Liljegren, I think, are your guys that slot in next year. And then you got Mac Hallwell, you got Niemela, who won the defensive award for best defenseman at the World Juniors. So,
yeah, but that's early. So the one thing I will say, developing blue liners takes a lot longer to get them into the blue line, into the lineup, and get them to be regular NHL players. It's just the way it is, just because that game is so fast and they just need to learn so much more than when they are playing junior hockey or whatever that case may be, AHL. But you don't know if all those players are going to be on the team, if they're going to be injured. So I always look at that going, we have no idea. Like, we don't even know if Toronto is going to lose any player in the next 3 games with an injury that won't see them play the rest of the postseason. Mm-hmm. So I don't like Freddie Anderson, and I never have in goal. And I think you need to have somebody else in goal. And I'm not sure that, okay, I'm going to throw this out there and it's going to be really unpopular. I'm going to get in a lot of trouble.
All right, cool.
I don't think Morgan Riley can play defense very well. Whoa. I think he's a very good offensive player. I'm not sure he's a great defensive defenseman. And prove me wrong, but anything I've seen, I have. And so here's the thing. I don't watch all 56 games of the Toronto Maple Leafs, but just what I've seen, I don't like for your number one defenseman. That's all.
Yeah.
I think he's extremely gifted, though.
That's a fair take. I don't see him, like, it's a contract year for him next year. After that, I don't see him coming back in the Leafs uniform.
Interesting.
I really like him. I really like him. I really do.
Why isn't he coming back?
I think you try to maybe get a goalie or just really spread more of the wealth, because he's
if he's your number one guy, and there's no question he is, do you not have to keep him?
I don't think he's our number one guy anymore. I think our best defenseman, our best defenseman is not flashy whatsoever. I barely notice him in the games, but I think that's a great thing. TJ Brody, I think he's been an amazing pickup. I think he's the Toronto Maple Leafs best defenseman. I think he's perfect with Riley. He's absolutely perfect. And like, if we didn't bring in Brody and we still had Barry, Riley's our number one guy. And like, we're not re-signing him, but we have Brody now. And I think I really like Brody. I think he's our number one guy. I think he's just very solid. And oh my, I love Jake Muzzin. I can't even try to forget about the time when we didn't have Jake Muzzin on this team. He is, like, last year when he went down with an injury, we were probably going to win that Columbus series. And then he went down with an injury, and our defensive play went tanked.
Those guys don't get a lot of credit. And so I will say you are absolutely bang on with Jake Muzzin for sure. Yep.
Yeah. But
interesting on TJ Brody. Okay. I won't argue that with you. Yeah.
I think for my cup prediction, I mean, I feel like I have to say Toronto. If I'm betting $1 million, I have like $1 million and I have to bet that, and I have to go safe bet. Ooh, Vegas. I have to go Vegas. Vegas. Because I think Colorado is probably the better team, but I think Vegas matches up better against Colorado, and they both can't go to the cup final. One of them has to come out of that division. So,
and they're both playing really good hockey, which is so I look forward to whatever that hopefully is a matchup, but I'm with you. I don't know who's the right pick to make there. So I'm going to stick with Colorado, but boy, it's tough to argue against Vegas.
And my last question before you, for you, before I let you go, is a very hot topic within Senators fans on Twitter and just social media and everything.
Oh, I don't know what's coming.
So Ottawa's been really good, like really, really good these past few weeks. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, I think it's for the players. It's very good. Like, you need to turn all those losses around mentally in your head. And so anytime I've talked to players recently, they get the, we want to start winning, or we want to build that winning culture. So listen, none of those players who are currently on the roster want a high draft pick. They don't care, right? It's their job. So they don't want to bring in another high-end player that's going to take their job or cost them a spot. Like, people get this all confused. Like, why are you winning and not trying to get a high-end pick? Well, because they're NHL players and they're already in the league. So those players, like Brady Tkachuk, has never played a meaningful hockey game in his NHL career. And same goes with like Tim Stützle and Drake Batherson and a lot of these guys, because they're all new. They need to learn how to win and they need to build a winning culture. And so you saw it at the end of the year, how much more they enjoyed it, how much more fun it was. That carries over huge to next season. They don't need another draft pick. They need to win some hockey games.
So do you think it will, so you think you're fine with dropping like four spots in the last month?
I don't care what pick they get. Like, they've got too many players now that are never going to play in the National Hockey League for the Ottawa Senators because there's no room. So they can keep saying, oh, we got all these draft picks. Where are they going to play exactly? So you have to end up moving those assets to try and bring in players that fit in your roster that help build you into a contender. There's just too many bodies for them to keep saying, oh, we've got this guy and this guy. Well, I don't know if Robbie Hervente or someone else who's a high draft pick, but is ever going to see the light of day because they don't have enough spots. So the whole draft pick thing, we can talk about it all day long. You can keep drafting players, but the Ottawa Senators have had five players in the last 6-7 drafts. I think it's five of the last 50 players, somewhere in there, have played 100 NHL games going into this season. So like, that you can draft 10 guys, but not like three of them might play in the National Hockey League for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
So I the draft pick doesn't matter to me.
Okay. This is me, Galaxy, bringing it before I let you go. Do they trade the pick? Galaxy brain, do they take your opinion and just like, yeah, we don't need another guy. We trade the pick for.
I think they draft the player.
Okay.
But they're going to end up having to flip some bodies. I can see them flipping the player later. Possibly depends on who they get, obviously, but
yeah,
like, I don't believe anymore the Ottawa Senators need to be tied to any of those players necessarily. Yeah, there's some good pieces of Jake Sanderson or whatever, but overall they've got players they've got to have to find a way to move. They can't sign them all later to huge 3-year deals, so there's just too many bodies.
All right, well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I had a great time.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Jack. Thanks, man.
Yeah, and before I let you go, you want to plug your social medias?
Oh, geez. What are they? Just follow me at Free Agent Wally on Twitter, or you can find us on wham.show on Instagram or somewhere. Look up Mark Mathot and some crazy thing he has said as well. You'll find him on Twitter.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And go follow us on our Twitter at @BlueLineWithJB and on our Instagram at @Blue_Line_Report. Go give us a rating on Apple Podcasts and stream all our episodes. Last we had a great interview with Scott Sabourin and Brent Wallace. Again, thank you for coming on the show. And we'll see you next week. We'll be back. Bye.